Hi, this is Dan Amrick from oneofswords.com, and you are listening to the Xbox 360 SoloCast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Xbox 360 SoloCast. I am your host, Smitty Smith, and today is Friday, December 9th. I'm recording a little bit late because if any of you follow me on Twitter, you know that my wife picked up a couple of extra shifts at work, and I had to tend to the children while she worked. And while I'm doing that, obviously, I'm not going to podcast. But you are tuning in for, what is this, episode 11, and it's a very special episode because it is the game of the year discussion. Let's get into the gamer score update first. I've got 86,469. That's 410 points since I last recorded, and I've played Skyrim, NBA 2K12, which is awesome, Modern Warfare 3, which isn't, and Assassin's Creed Revelations, which really isn't. Not going to talk too much about the games and the other stuff that's going on because I have quite a lengthy discussion for Games of the Year. So on the dashboard this week, you are going to notice a completely new dashboard, slightly delayed. They had some issues, but I'm interested in what everybody thinks about the new dashboard. It's Kinect sensitive, voice activated, and ad heavy. Go ahead and email in xbox360solocast@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the new dashboard, and I think I'll be using that as the hot topic for this week. Moving along. We haven't had much release. I misspoke last episode and explained that Apples to Apples was coming out on Xbox Live Arcade last week, when actually it's this week. Also, there are some deals. You can get Lara Croft, Guardian of Light for half off, 600 Microsoft points. You can get Prince of Persia Classic for 400 points. That's also half off. And there's some DLC, Arkham City Skins Pack, which is basically all the retail exclusives for 400 Microsoft points. Also, you can get DLC for Defense Grid, which is a tower defense game. It's titled You Monster and features GLaDOS from the Portal franchise. There's 8 levels, 35 challenges, and over 15 hours of content for $5. You can't beat that. A couple of new demos, GoldenEye 007 Reloaded, King of Fighters 13. I'm hearing bad things about GoldenEye, and I'm not interested in checking out any game that has the number 13 after it, unless it's Final Fantasy, and even then I'm probably going to avoid. Games on demand, there's 4 new games: Dragon Age 2, Silent Hill Homecoming, Tornado Outbreak, and Kane and Lynch Dead Men. Only a couple of brief tidbits of news this week. Ninja Gaiden 3 is going to be coming out in March 2012, which means April 2012 people will be buying new controllers because Ninja Gaiden and the entire series is hard as shit. And South Park, the RPG, will be developed by Obsidian. It's going to be created and overseen by the creators, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, I guess, is who it is. Obsidian is the developer that did Fallout New Vegas, and they're very well known for RPGs, so I'm kind of excited, but I'm kind of not, because I really just don't give a shit about South Park anymore. I'm not a 14-year-old high school dude, so I've kind of outgrown it. Let's go ahead and get into the discussion about games of the year. Now, obviously, you can only have one game of the year, but I have a bunch of different categories with different nominees in each. So we're going to go ahead and start with my biggest regret of the year. And this is going to be the game that I didn't play, but I really, really regret not touching. Okay, and I've got 5 nominees. We've got Portal 2. Okay, and that's obviously the co-op looked cool. I really enjoyed Portal 1, and the humor that's inherent to the writing of Valve themselves, to get a little more granular, Portal 2, it's just awesome, and unfortunately I never got a chance to pick it up. I wanted to rent it because I don't think it's purchase worthy just because it is so short, and I mean nobody's talking about it anymore. But Portal 2 is one I really regret. Okay, also Deus Ex Human Revolution. I never got a chance to play this game. I really want to play it on Xbox 360 for the achievements. I own it for OnLive, the streaming internet service, but even then I don't play it very often, and from what I understand, this is a really cool RPG with a lot of different elements. It's almost like what Alpha Protocol should have been. Okay, Gears of War 3. We all know Gears of War. We know that the game was legendary. The series is legendary. They're not going to stop creating this Gears of War branded, game type. But Gears of War 3, the end of a trilogy, and I wish I'd picked that up. Dead Space 2. The only reason I didn't pick this one up was because I never played Dead Space 1, and that's another regret from a few years ago. But Dead Space 2, it's more of a survival horror shooter than it is just a regular shooter, since BioShock, I don't think there's ever been a game that really put that fear into me. Even when I played Fear 2, I didn't have that feeling, that same feeling that I get when I play something like BioShock. And from what I hear, Dead Space should have filled that void that I have in the gaming world. Okay, Dragon Age 2, regardless of the reviews it's getting and the fact that they've changed things, I still like the Dragon Age franchise. One was awesome. Two, it looks like from, the brief time I spent with the demo, two really could have filled a hack and slash third person action game for me. Unfortunately, now I'm caught up in Skyrim and I don't see myself going back and playing it. So the question is, which is my biggest regret of the year? Well, you might be surprised. It's actually Gears of War 3. I played, half of the first Gears of War before I put it away. And that was during a time when I was spending most of my time playing World of Warcraft. I really didn't console much. But from the sheer visuals that I'm seeing, the videos, the online play, I played a little bit of it at PAX East 2011. I'm really, really missing out and doing myself a disservice by not picking up Gears of War 3. So, question to you guys, maybe you can chime in on Twitter or shoot me an email. Should I just start at the first one and work my way through, or am I okay to pick up Gears of War 3 and start there and not feel left out? All right, just let me know. Now, we're going to go ahead and move to a more positive note. Funnest game of the year, okay? And this is the game that basically is what it says it is. Which game did I have the most fun with throughout my playtime? And this might not be the best game or the best visuals or has a crappy story, but there's something about the game that just is really fun for me, and I have this narrowed down to four games. First, Tropico 4. I know I've ranted and raved about this game. Tropico is a simulation where you develop a city or a town. You micromanage every aspect from the cost of your exports to how many imports you want to bring in, to the people you have, and you have to juggle all these different aspects to keep so many people happy. Otherwise, you'll have revolts, assassination attempts on you, and things like that. It's not a combat game. It's a true to life simulation of what it would be to, or what it would take to be a dictator. And I sunk 20 or 30 hours into it within a week and a half. It's a really, really fun game. Next on the list, which might also surprise some of you, Captain America Super Soldier. I don't think that there is any comic book franchise tie-in that I've ever had this much fun with. Captain America was awesome, and that includes the next game, Batman. But the reason it's funnest game of the year and it's not getting one of the other awards is because the story is pretty linear. The free roam is limited to certain areas of the map, but every other aspect of it, the leveling up, the challenges that get included with it, just hit a point where it's really hard to explain. It's just one of those things where you sit down and you play through it and you're just so amazed at every aspect, the visuals, the audio, the gameplay itself. I wish the story had been a little bit better, but if if Captain America was ever put in setting like Batman Arkham City, Captain America it would be a potential game of the year for me. It was just a really, really fun game. And that actually leads into the next one, Batman Arkham City. Yes, it's a comic book tie-in, but the gameplay itself didn't remind me of that. You had this free roam, somewhat limited city, but there's so much stuff for you to go do. The combat's amazing, and Captain America took a lot of cues from Batman. I don't fault it for that. In fact, I praise it for understanding that Batman had a good system and they wanted to borrow from it. So, finally, Saints Row the Third. You know that I reviewed this for Kmart Gamer, and I gave it a 4.5 out of 5, simply because there is no game as fun as Saints Row the Third. So obviously that is my choice for funnest game of 2011. It's a pretty bland award to get, but if you take a step back and you look at it for what it is, I mean, we're all gamers. We game because we want to have fun. A game like this takes out all the bullshit that you might get from L.A. Noire or from Grand Theft Auto, and just keeps all the stuff in there that you want. And that's why it's getting award for funnest game of 2011. I recommend everybody should go out and pick this game up because it's so much fun. There's online play, there's particular game modes and things like that, and you're missing out if you're not playing. Now, starting with the, or I shouldn't say starting, but continuing with my biggest letdown of the year, I have a group of actually six games, and I hate talking about negativity. I like loving games. So, what we're going to do is we're going to try to breeze through this. I'll talk a little bit about why I thought these were letdowns. Okay. The first letdown was Hunted, the Demon Forge. The biggest letdown was because this is a Bethesda game. I was expecting this deep, engrossing RPG game that threw in, particular elements, some loot hunting for me, and it turned out to be this linear hack and slash button mashing game where everything looked wet, and I expect so much more. When I say it's the biggest letdown of the year, this is based on what my expectations were and what it actually brought to the table. Okay, so continuing along with the Bethesda theme, Brink is second on the list, and this was the first-person shooter that added in a bit of parkour, but touted this online gameplay mechanic. Even if you weren't online, you had AI that was there to help you and move you along to your next objective. And the AI sucked. The movement was neat, but in the end, halted by their own system issues, constant freezing and server issues, Brink ended up being it's one of these games that is forgotten, and it shouldn't have been, because the gameplay idea itself was really good. It's just the execution sucked. Homefront is next on the list, another shooter, and this one, this is, it's not one that suffers from being bad. It's one that suffers from being boring. It was the same shooter type of game that we've seen year after year after year. Everybody wanted something else, and this didn't bring anything new, or I should say, didn't bring much new to the table. On top of that, the single player was just ridiculous. The single player hinged on the fact that you had to get some gas and bring it to the army. So the United States Army, while fending off attacks from the Koreans, was waiting for a bunch of shithead militia people to bring them two trucks full of gas in order to win the country back. That's basically my thought on it. It was just a big sigh. They really missed out, and it's unfortunate because it caused closure of one of Chaos's studios. Chaos is the developer. Assassin's Creed Revelations. Yes, this game just came out, but I don't know if I should have included this game because I can't explain why this is a letdown, why I'm upset with this game. It's Assassin's Creed. It's everything I like about Assassin's Creed. It's just there's just this aura about it that I know I'm not the only one that's feeling it. It's just hard to get into. It's hard to get grabbed and pulled into the game. I mean, I've played all the Assassin's Creed up to this point, and there's just something about this one. I don't know if it's the fact that it came out during one of the best video game months ever. But I thought the fact that it was releasing in November caused November to be one of the best video game months ever. So, a big miss there. L.A. Noire, and this was getting rants and raves, and yes, the visuals, the HD camera work that's done in this game is the best I have ever seen. The gameplay itself is boring. It's essentially a point-and-click adventure. Find the clues and use them. I'm going to go back and finish it at some point. At what point, I'm not really sure, because I didn't really get into the game. It's neat to look at. You know, it's that girl in college that you see from across the room that's absolutely gorgeous. But when you get up close and you get to know her, she's dumb as shit. And that's L.A. Noire. All right. Finally, WWE 12. I did a review on this. This is a game that I was really, really excited for. It was sent to me for review. I've been out of the world of WWE games for years. I'm finally going to get back into it, and my phone's ringing. And the phone's not ringing anymore. My wife took care of that. So, where were we? Okay, we were talking about WWE 12. WWE 12, like I said, it had all these expectations, and when I got into it, the visuals are great. The audio is great. The modes are awesome. Everything about it except the gameplay is phenomenal. But the problem is, this game hinges on its gameplay. Okay, without good gameplay, you've got a shitty game. You've got... You know, you polish a turd, it's still a turd. And I'm not saying WWE 12 is a turd, okay? If you're into those kind of games and you can actually figure out the goddamn controls, it's a fun game. I can't figure out the controls, and after 4 hours of getting my face smashed off a turnbuckle, I don't want to learn them, okay? I've done my time, I gave it a fair shake, and it's not for me. So, that is the six I have for biggest upset of the year. What I'm going to give the award to is L.A. Noire. I had these huge expectations based on everything we were seeing. Initial reports was that it was an amazing game. But it turned out being, like I said, the beautiful woman that you don't want to talk to. You don't want to get to know. You want to fuck her for a night and then leave her. That's what L.A. Noire is. L.A. Noire is a cheap one-night stand. Your action-adventure RPG game of the year. This comes down to three entries, because I'm getting rid of one right now. Batman Arkham City. Obviously, we've talked about that. Saints Row the Third. We've discussed that briefly. And Dead Island. Dead Island was the game that put out the awesome trailer that, showed the little girl getting chewed on and thrown out a window and stuff. And it turned out that Dead Island was an action RPG from a first-person view in a survival horror game where you build some of the craziest weapons that you've ever seen in your life. Electric baseball bats and knives that explode, and you have skills where you throw a knife and it returns to you. And it's absolutely ridiculous, but that's why I love it, okay? Zombies aren't real. Let's hope. Zombies aren't real. None of this other shit is real as well, so why not keep it somewhat realistic, but give the players some sort of semblance of fun, and that's exactly what they did. Okay, so my choice of action or adventure or RPG game of the year goes to Batman Arkham City. The game's too good not to give some sort of award to it, because I mean, if you haven't played it, you need to at least go and rent it. Okay, because I guarantee you, you'll buy it. You'll rent it. You'll play for a few hours. You'll go to return it, and you'll be at this point where you're thinking, "I wonder what's next." I shouldn't have answered the phone because I never finished that mission. Or Bane, you son of a bitch, we're working together, really. So it creates this intrigue, this inner monologue with players, that you wonder what's going through Batman's mind. Sure, there are plot holes, and there are, certain combat elements that I wish they hadn't done. I don't need 400 different gadgets. Batman does, I get that, but I'm playing as Batman. Limit it a little bit to just the cool stuff. But Batman is my action-adventure RPG game of the year. Okay, and again, that's not a merge of all three. My selections from those different categories. Shooter of the year. We're going to go ahead and run down through all the shooters I played, including the shitty ones. Brink. We've talked about Brink. Obviously, that's not going to get my award because that was in my major upsets. Same with Homefront. Okay. I put these in here because I wanted to reiterate the fact that these are shooters. If you're looking for a value shooter, these are probably on the sale bin. I would say Homefront's single player is at least worth a playthrough if you can get it for 10 or 15 bucks. Brink, I would say avoid that altogether because there's nobody online anymore and you're probably wasting your time. Bulletstorm. Bulletstorm, I wrote a review for Bulletstorm that was the most vile, vulgar review I have ever done in my life. And the reason I did that is because Bulletstorm's writing is exactly what the review was. It's this combination of some of the most grotesque words, dick tits, and threats of shooting my dick off that you've ever seen. But Bulletstorm didn't take itself serious, okay? It didn't say, this is what we're doing, but we're going to toss in curse words to seem like we're adults. What they did is they took every man's little boy, for you female listeners out there, you know the comments men make that you kind of think to yourself, what the fuck did he just say that for? That's the most ignorant thing I've ever heard in my life. And instead of saying that, you just kind of roll your eyes and ignore it. My wife knows exactly what I'm talking about. Bulletstorm is the culmination of everything that every man's ever said to make a woman do that, and guns are added. It's just this cool, fun, neat little game that gives everybody an opportunity to kick someone face first into a cactus. It's like the Saints Row the Third of third person games, you know? It's just fun. Diet Dr. Pepper tonight, gang. So, if you hear my voice start going, I might have to take a sip, which I just did. And again. So, moving on to Crysis 2. I never played Crysis. I never thought I'd like it, but I said, fuck it, I'll pick up Crysis 2 anyway and give it a go. Crysis 2 ended up being a really, really fun game. I had a lot of enjoyment because it was different. It wasn't your typical military shooter. You've got your suit that has all these different powers, and you can do different things. You can stealth through a level, you can go balls to the wall and shoot your way through different weapons, different paths to get to your goal. It was really fun. You'll notice a trending theme here with games that are fun. The games that aren't fun, like Battlefield 3. Now, Battlefield 3, you've got with shooters. I should have said this to begin with. You've got two aspects of every shooter you're looking at. You've got your single player game. You've got your multiplayer game. Shooter of the year is going to be the game that is the peak of both of those. Okay, Battlefield 3, while it had a great single player, and a lot of people disagree, but I really enjoyed Battlefield 3. Sure, it took a lot of cues from Call of Duty. You've got the flashback scenario. You've got, the typical heat vision flying over an airfield shooting people scenario. But regardless, the Battlefield 3 single player was really neat. The single player starts in a particular way and kind of loops and folds back in on itself to create this weird circle of intrigue, I guess. And it's one of the only games that I played on the hardest difficulty this year and actually beat it on. So that added a little bit of an element of challenge, which I really enjoyed, regardless of, what may have come from my mouth while I was playing. I really did enjoy Battlefield 3. The online is well documented in previous podcasts. So I have to say, of all online modes, Battlefield 3 was my least favorite. It wasn't bad. It's just something I didn't like, and it's different, okay? Battlefield 3 is different than Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which is what we're talking about next. Modern Warfare 3 is a run and gun in your face, quick scoping, twitch shooter. Battlefield 3 is a tactical simulation, and that's why I didn't like it. And yes, you need better skills to play Battlefield 3 than you do Modern Warfare 3, okay? Which is why I like Modern Warfare better. But a Battlefield 3 player probably can't pop into Modern Warfare 3 and do well right off the bat. Likewise, for a Modern Warfare 3 player popping into Battlefield 3, you're not going to do well off the bat. The issues I had were the server issues and the party issues, okay? So, Battlefield 3 did not get my Shooter of the Year. Modern Warfare 3, the single player, I liked better than Battlefield 3. Again, this is one that I played on the hardest difficulty and actually beat. I have to say, it's very, very unsatisfying in certain areas where you constantly have to be moving up, otherwise enemies will continuously respawn. I don't like that. Also, grenade spam. I didn't run into it much, but when I did, what a pain in the ass. The online mode is disappointing, and that's only because I got into Black Ops heavily. I got to, I think, the 11th or 12th prestige, which is the furthest I've ever gotten in any Call of Duty game, and then hop into Modern Warfare 3 expecting to continue this, you know, fiery passion of online shooters, only to find out that it's actually kind of shitty. I don't know what this connection lag implementation that they put in, whatever it is, it's not working, because I've never had such a poor connection as I do with Modern Warfare 3, and two bullets will kill me, whereas in Black Ops, I mean, it's three or four. I'm forcing myself to try and enjoy Modern Warfare 3, and it wasn't until just these last couple of nights that I realized that, and I'm probably going to go back to Black Ops to just continue my prestiging there. I'll pop in Modern Warfare 3 here and there, but again, Modern Warfare 3 is not my Shooter of the Year. What does win Shooter of the Year, and it was a toss-up between Bulletstorm and Crysis 2, surprisingly, but Crysis 2 is going to have to pull it down. I didn't play much online. Frankly, I don't think I played more than three or four games, but the games I played were very fun. Okay, and it gave a different element. They were well done, well balanced, and really, had I put more time into it, if I wasn't in love with the Black Ops, Crysis 2, I think, really would have been my game of the year, because I really enjoyed the single player. Again, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, they didn't enjoy it because of the story was different than Crysis 1 and things like that. I really enjoyed the single player, and the multiplayer was different, but not different to the point where it was bad. So, Crysis 2, Shooter of the Year. Who here is surprised? I certainly was when I sat down to write this. We're going to go ahead and do Xbox Live Indie Game of the Year. And this came down to three choices, actually. Solar 2, Cute Things Dying Violently, and Cthulhu Saves the World. Those are the three best Xbox Live Indie games that I played. And these are games off of the Indie Game Marketplace. These aren't indie developers, okay? But Indie Game of the Year is a tie, actually. It's Cute Things Dying Violently and Solar 2. I enjoyed Cthulhu Saves the World. That's akin to the old Final Fantasy RPG type games. But Solar 2, you know, was my indie game spotlight when I first started recording this podcast a couple of months ago. It's where you fly around the solar system, you grow into a planet, then into a sun, then into a black hole, eat a bunch of other black holes, you explode, and you start the whole thing over again. It's not really a game, and it doesn't really have this huge objective to it. The physics and what the game allowed me to do, which is just, you know, go do whatever you want, I really enjoyed that, and that's why Solar 2, not to mention the graphics are actually pretty decent for I'm not going to say for an indie game, but I'm going to say for what Solar was and what it cost, fantastic game. Cute Things Dying Violently, similarly, not the best visuals, but the visuals match the gameplay style perfectly, okay? You shoot these little cute things into an elevator, and you do your best to make sure all of them, you know, if you start with five or six, you do your best to make sure they all make it into the elevator. The problem is you've got strategically positioned buzzsaws, fire, spikes, you know, pits of death that are all around that you have to avoid while you fling these things. I have said repeatedly that my boy Alejandro J on Twitter, he's the creator of Cute Things Dying Violently, he needs to bring this game to the iOS, because on the iPad, I would buy 10 of this game to give out as prizes. It's that fun of a game. So Alejandro, if you're listening, dude, congratulations, Xbox Live Indie Game of the Year. Bring the damn game to iOS. Get off your ass. we're going to go ahead. We'll move on to Xbox Live Arcade Game of the Year. And we've got this narrowed down to six. And I think you're going to be surprised at the six and even more surprised at my selection. We'll start with Bastion. Supergiant Games created Bastion for Xbox Live Summer of Arcade. It was arguably one of the best RPGs of 2011. Not arcade RPGs. One of the best RPGs. It's got this narrative, you know, the audio, the visuals, the cel-shaded, cartoony, yet realistic-type visuals, and the gameplay itself was amazing. The weapons you can get, the upgrades, you know, the different little cocktails that you can drink to do different things, just really, really took me to a place that an RPG game hasn't taken me to in a very, very long time. Orcs Must Die. This is the single-player tower defense meets shooter. It was one of the first games to implement that type of feature, and it's one of the hardest, funnest games I have ever played. Okay, so hard, in fact, I actually had to turn it down to the easiest difficulty in order to not put my fist through my TV. It gets hard, and it gets hard fast. But Orcs Must Die was one of, actually, I think it might be the first game I ever gave a perfect score to. Now, it's not a perfect game, but every element of the game implemented hand in hand with each other made a perfect experience for me. Next on the list, Trendy Entertainment's Dungeon Defenders. This is another game that earned a perfect score for me. Now, what's funny is I've never given a perfect score. I gave two in back-to-back weeks for Xbox Live Arcade games. Granted, I have tightened up my review system a little bit because I really had to take a look at myself. Two perfect scores in two consecutive weeks. The odds of that aren't very good, but Dungeon Defenders earned it. Again, it's this tower defense, third-person action RPG game with a touch of loot hunt involved. So it just tickled this itch that you take all these genres and you mash them together and you expect to get this just... you know, this amalgamation of crap. You know, you get too many elements, and you can get inundated with a lot of different tactics trying to work together. It just doesn't feel right. Thank God they got Dungeon Defenders correct, because it's possibly one of the funnest games on Xbox Live Arcade. Okay. Section 8 Prejudice. This is another game that this was my surprise of PAX East 2011. I went there not expecting much. I've played Section 8. Found out it's a $15 downloadable title with a full single-player game, a thick online game, and then this challenge mode where you fend off waves of attackers. It was fun. It was one of those things where it allowed you to escape from your typical shooter. Hop into a game that was $15, you get $60 visuals, $60 audio, and $60 gameplay at a $15 price. It was phenomenal. I loved Section 8 Prejudice. And if you haven't had a chance to play it, buy the game, let me know. I'll hop online and we'll play together. Okay, I'll get a group of people, because it's a game that you need to experience. Okay, if you can get it on sale, fantastic, but if not, it is certainly worth the $15. Toy Soldiers Cold War, and this is done by Signal Studios, who has obviously been kind enough to send me a bunch of swag to hand out on the podcast. That's not the reason this game is being included. Okay, this game is being included because it's another one of those tower defense games where you are in control of how the towers react. You can hop into the guns and shoot. You can hop into, you know, the planes and the tanks and things, and defend against waves and waves of these little army men and toy vehicles trying to make their way to your home base. You know, it's like being in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids meets Rambo. It's it's one of those cool genre mashups that, you know, the Signal Studios has put their own little twist on it to make it just this fun, entertaining game. And they've got DLC coming out soon. If you guys haven't had a chance to play it, with the DLC that's coming out, it's going to add hours to the actual gameplay. You need to go pick it up. Okay. And finally, Torchlight. Torchlight is the Diablo clone that was actually created by the creators of the original Diablo and Diablo 2 from Blizzard North. Max Schaefer and I, who is the CEO of Runic Games, who created Torchlight, sat down and had a nice little interview, and they've got Torchlight 2 coming out eventually, hopefully to Xbox. Right now it's only slated for PC, but Torchlight on the Xbox 360 gave Runic Games their best day of sales in the history of their company. So people loved the game. All right, it is Diablo with a different arcade style, or I'm sorry, different graphical style. Okay, you dive into dungeons, you get massive amounts of loot, and you level up and get skills. This is a game that I haven't played in a while, and now that I'm sitting here talking about it, I'm probably going to hop in and play it again. There are rarely games that I keep on my hard drive. When I'm done playing them, they usually get deleted. Every game that I've listed here today is still on my hard drive and deserves to be played again, 6 months, a year, 2 years after they were made. So, what gets my Xbox Live Arcade Game of the Year? Surprisingly, not Bastion. Bastion was fantastic, but Bastion isn't the game that I had the most fun with. The game that I had the most fun with and put the most amount of time in is the game where I was the first person in the world to get all of the achievements, and that's Torchlight. Torchlight is Diablo for the Xbox 360. Torchlight is fun. Torchlight is deep. Torchlight offers hours of gameplay. And Torchlight proves to Blizzard that Diablo 3 can be successful on a console. And I think the sole reason that Blizzard put the heat on getting a console release for Diablo, it'll be announced, trust me, is that Torchlight was so successful. Okay, so go out and buy Torchlight. In fact, buy all of them, but if you're starting at the top of my list, buy Torchlight, pick up the rest at the same time. It's really hard to determine what my favorite Xbox Live Arcade Game of the Year was, because this was arguably the best year for arcade games. Okay. Now, my sports game of the year, I've got five selections here, and we're going to start with NCAA Football 12. This is the best football game I have ever played. Granted, I didn't pick up Madden 12 this year, which is why it's not on the list. Okay, maybe it should have been in my, biggest regrets of 2011. Unfortunately, it's a yearly installment, and while it may be the best Madden ever, NCAA Football 12 was certainly the best NCAA football ever. It adds in all the modes that you had before, Road to Heisman. You've got your own player that you skill up. You take him right through a high school season and then get him, brought into college. And from that point, the world is your oyster. You've got 4 years to earn the Heisman Trophy and then go pro. On top of that, it's got a very, very passionate online community. And this online community, let's say I choose the school I always choose as my favorite school in NCAA is Kent State. I don't go for one of the big name schools. I like taking Kent State and trying to work them up into a top 25 team year after year. And every time I played a game at a particular level and played it the way it's supposed to be played, I earned points for Kent State. And granted, Kent State's not going to be near the top. You're going to have something like the Ohio State University or Texas, things like that are always near the top. They have more students and more students that play football. But to know that I'm contributing to the rankings, to these meaningless rankings with NCAA Football 12, it added this level of personality that I didn't really expect to get from a simple football game. So that's why it's in Sports Game of the Year for my list this year. Secondly, Fight Night Champion. I love boxing games. I love the Fight Night franchise. I loved it before when it was called Knockout Kings. Fight Night Champion, the only flaw it had was the story mode, and that is because that last fight with that dude where you have to meet certain requirements round after round, and he can knock you down in one shot, was a bunch of bullshit, okay? It was rage-inducing, and it never should have been implemented into the game. If they do another Fight Night, and I hope they do, take that shit out and just let me pound on people. Nicktoons MLB, and you might be thinking, Nicktoons, really? Yes, really. This was an arcade Major League Baseball game akin to the Bigs, only with Nicktoons characters. So my son could sit down and watch me pitch a perfect game with SpongeBob while Ren Howick from Ren and Stimpy hit for the cycle. It was just one of these cutesy games took the realism out of it and added in the arcade touch that everybody wants every once in a while with a baseball game. However, MLB 2K11, which is also on the list here, adds a sense of realism. 2K games, 2K Sports is really, really moving up my list. I'm solely an EA guy, and I think no one developer should have contract rights to any one sport, okay? EA's got Madden. MLB has 2K Sports. After the debacle that was MLB 2K10, I didn't expect much out of 2K11, but when I sat down and gave it some time, it's a phenomenal actual sports simulation game. You don't come out and go 5-for-5 with 5 grand slams. Even on easy mode with all the sliders shot up, which is usually how I play, I mean, I'm still only getting 10 or 12 runs a game, which I know that's a lot, but you have to understand as well that I cheat. So MLB 2K11, really fun, and the My Player mode there was one of the most fulfilling, just deep My Player modes I've seen in any sports game. It doesn't top, however, NBA 2K12, and I'll go ahead and say NBA 2K12 gets my sports game of the year. I just got NBA 2K12 sent to me. I've got an article I'll be writing weekly for Kmart Gamer. We're going to go ahead and simulate on the hardest difficulty settings the NBA season and compare it to the actual abridged NBA season that we're going to see starting up on Christmas Day. And we're going to take a look to see how close NBA 2K12 is to real life. And the reason I'm doing that is because as I play the game and play my player and play, you know, the single player dynasty type mode and the other modes, the legends mode and things like that, I'm realizing that this might be the greatest NBA game that has ever been created. I usually like the arcadey type games, the EA Sports NBA Live series, for instance, which they haven't put out a game for 2 years. So 2K Sports really gets a 2-year pass to make shitty games, but they didn't. They didn't rest on their laurels. They came out, developed an amazing game with all these different features, all these different options, and licensed NBA legends. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and NBA 2K12 wins the Xbox 360 SoloCast Sports Game of the Year. Okay, now we'll move on to the capper, and this is Game of the Year. Now, it's probably not going to be a shock to anybody, but let's go ahead and get into some emails from people. Now, these are 2 emails. The emailers are going to win some prizes from the prize vault here. Let's start with an actual pal of mine, Stang7043. He wrote in and said, "I only play FPS games, and I've played Gears of War 3. Not sure if that's considered a free first-person shooter or not, but if I had to choose the best FPS of the year, I would have to go with Battlefield 3, hands down. Why, you ask? In my opinion, I think they made the biggest strides in improving their game. It was a good single-player mode, and I didn't feel like the single-player was just a filler for multiplayer. As far as updating their graphics engine, maps, vehicles, gameplay, I think they still need to put in a private match option, but this is Stang7043's Game of the Year. I selected this because he makes a valid argument, and as much as I hate Battlefield 3, they did make a lot of strides. So, Stang, email the podcast, give me your mailing address, we'll get some swag sent out to you. Thank you for writing in. RK1 Apocalypse, someone else who is on my friends list. He wrote in and said, his is a tie between both Skyrim and Batman Arkham City. Between these two, I don't think I could just pick one. Both of the games are the two best games I've played in a while. Batman's storyline was filled with some amazing aspects. The selection of villains featured in the plot were awesome, not to mention the side quests like Stop the Muggings and the Riddler trophies. As for Skyrim, the game was just flat-out beautiful. The scale and the amount of things to do in that game just blew my mind. I've put well over 40 hours into it, amateur, and barely even touched the main storyline. Not many games can keep me occupied for a long period of time, but both Batman and Skyrim did it. But if I had to pick just one, I think I'd have to go with Batman Arkham City. It was just overall an amazing game and only fed my inner superhero nerd. Both games are fantastic, as you can tell from Batman winning the Action RPG Adventure Game of the Year. But you make some valid points, and I like the fact that nobody went with the typical pick right now for Game of the Year, which is Skyrim. Skyrim got my Game of the Year. I'm glad people aren't just falling in line and being sheep. They're developing their own opinions on games and writing in to explain those opinions and explain them well. So because of that, RK1 Apocalypse and Stang7043 are going to get some swag. Both of you need to email xbox360solocast@gmail.com with your mailing addresses, and I'll mail some stuff off to you guys. Now, as I said before, my game of the year is Skyrim. Now let's talk about why. First off, the visuals. There isn't a game out there right now that has visuals like Skyrim. The draw distance is amazing. Snow-covered peaks. Random weather. It could be snowing one second. It could be raining another. It could be bright and sunny another. Okay, you've got a day-night cycle. You've got AI that will legitimately go about their daily routines and do their own thing regardless of whether or not you're there. I can't tell you how many times I happened upon a dead NPC that had a name where I just had to wonder, did he have a particular quest for me that I want to play? Or is this guy someone I'm supposed to kill? It's just all those questions, you know, in terms of the engine and the gameplay itself. If you read the review I have up on my blog, it's called The Glory of the Story. Skyrim gives players that need for a story, okay? I could tell you something right now that happened to me in Skyrim. 10 of you would email with something cooler that happened. 20 of you would email saying, where did that happen? And 50 of you wouldn't email at all, but would go back to playing Skyrim because you want to experience something like that as well, okay? It's just one of these things that it gives players a different thought process. You can be a thief. You can be an archer. You can be a knight. You can be a scoundrel. You can be a treasure hunter. You can be a vampire or a werewolf, for Christ's sakes. And Skyrim does that. Now, what actually caused me to pick Skyrim above some of the others, and it really was a toss-up, was the audio. I haven't heard audio like this in a game maybe ever. The audio cues, you know, it almost sounds like an orchestra sometimes conducted the music or just you know, the overall aesthetic, the feeling you have, the aura as you play sucks you into the game further. You know, the random conversations, the dragon shouts that you hear from across the map, and you look and you see a dragon circling a mountain peak way off in the distance, and you think to yourself, I need to get there. But before you get there, you get 50 different quests that take you everywhere, and then 12 hours later, you end up being in that same place looking across the tundra and seeing that same dragon circle the mountain, and you go, oh yeah, I was supposed to kill that bastard, okay? And then the whole circle starts over again. It is the pinnacle of gaming. It's everything every gamer has ever wanted, whether you want first person or third person, whether you want to breeze through single player, the main storyline, if you want a challenge or you want it easy and you want to feel like a god, it's all wrapped up into Skyrim. I've put over 100 hours into it at this point, and I'm not done. Skyrim is Game of the Year 2011. I want to thank everybody for writing in. I did get a lot of submissions for Game of the Year in the email inbox. Last week, the Xbox 360 SoloCast had the best week in downloads it's ever had. So I want to thank everybody for listening. It's been quite a year, and I can only wonder what 2012 is going to bring. But I guarantee you, I'll be here for it. Hopefully you will too. Thanks for tuning in, guys. I will see you in a week. Take care.